Yeah, we're going to begin a new parak tonight. Again, we're going to be a bit selective, chas v'shalom, not because one pasuk is more important than another pasuk, but sometimes based on the shiftless of our madrega, so my madrega, and also your madrega, it's sometimes it's hard to see what the chiddush of the pasukim are, so I try to focus on things that at least the lesson is a bit more apparent. And the favorish. Yes, yeah, so the pasuk starts off. Perek Yud Beis, Ohev Musar, Ohev Das. Now, if you were to simply translate this pasuk, the Vilna Gaon is an unusual translation. Musar normally means chastisement, criticism, working on yourself, either coming from your own cheshbon nefesh, or musar means being makabel tochacha from somebody else. And indeed, that seems to fit exactly what the pasuk is saying, because in Mishlei, we often have contrasts. So it says, ohev musar, he who loves musar, ohev das, loves wisdom. V'sainei teichachas, but he who hates teichacha, rebuke, is a bar is going to be a fool. So the pashtus, ohev musar and sonei tochacha are opposites, right? That's the structure of the verse. And ohev musar is a lover of wisdom. A one who hates teichacha is a fool. And indeed, this is a theme that is said many, many times in Mishlei. Maybe why the Gra departs from the translation. The Gra translates musar here not to refer to chastisement. Okay, before I get to that, Rabbeinu Yaina Taka learns the first way that I said. Rabbeinu Yaina says in Shari Tshuva, he says one of the most important ways that a person comes to Tshuva and remains righteous is by being a person who loves Tochacha. Very high Madrega. Loves Tochacha. Who loves Tochacha? Who loves to be criticized? But if a person is really, really committed to Avodas Hashem, then they love when people can show them ways that they could be better. Now, avada, if somebody is being mochiach you because they're bitter, they're jealous, they don't like you, they like to criticize people, that type of tochacha not only is not going to help you, but that just ruins you. But if it's tochacha from someone who cares about you, like that's why the Torah says, hocheach tochiach es amisecha. Look at the lesson of the Torah. You shall rebuke amisecha, your friend. The four Shem say, you want to give tochacha? There has to be a relationship of friendship and love. You don't give tochacha to somebody that you hate or you dislike, but you don't care about. So Rabbeinu Yaina says that the maila of loving tochacha is a very, very important madrega in Avodas Hashem, a very hard madrega to achieve. Nobody really is an ohev tochacha. But I mentioned this before because this idea has come up many times throughout Mishlei, that in Europe at least, maybe even today, although you don't see it that much, there would actually be chavrusas, in which the musar chavrusas, in which the job of one person would be to point out where the other person needs to improve. And, that's a kind of friendship. What does the Rambam say? The Rambam says there are three reasons for friends. One is, we'll call it utilitarianism. I don't have a friend, I lose my keys, who's going to let me in the house, who's going to pick me up? No, you need a friend, practical, things happen. Another is friendship, a person is lonely, or companionship rather, a person is lonely, so you need a friend. But the Rambam says the third level of friendship is the most important, and that is the purpose of a friend is to enable each person to grow in their Avodas Hashem by the friend giving them chizuk when they feel weak, and by the friends helping them grow in what they need to improve. Now that's not an easy friendship. That is not a friendship necessarily where you just have a good time. That's sometimes a friendship where some very serious things are discussed. And sometimes it may even be hurtful. But if it comes from love and concern, a person could be makabel. Now a friend can mean a chavrusa, it can mean someone in yeshiva. A friend could be your spouse, husband and wife. We're called reyim ahuvim, beloved friends. And even in a marriage, right? The point of a marriage is not to simply, have a house together, even have kids together. The point is to help each other become the best person that you're capable of becoming. That's the avodah of marriage. That's why the Sefer Chassidus say that sometimes that requires that husband and wife bedavka see the world in different ways. This is the famous word of the Sfas on Ezer Kenegdo, to make a helpmate. What does Hashem say? It's not good for man to be alone. Let me make a helpmate to be opposite him. So the Gemara says, well, is it a helpmate or an opposite? Opposite means opposition. So the Gemara says, if you're Zaycha, you have an Ezer. If you're not Zaycha, you have a Kenegdo. The Gemara gives a practical answer. But the Sfas Emes says that in a deeper way, Ezer Kenegdo, the help that a wife gives her husband, and who at the end a husband gives the wife, is precisely that they're not just a yes person, that they see the world in different ways, and they help you therefore look at life in a way that you wouldn't have seen by yourself. So the kenegdai itself can be the azer, bedavka. Because otherwise, you just have a clone. So what tayelus is there? To have somebody who sees the world exactly as you see it, so every decision you make is always right. What's the tachlis? I mean, I knew that before I got married, you know. What exactly would the purpose of that be? There's a Gemara like that by Talmud Torah. The Gemara says that when Rav Yochanan, right, Rav Yochanan, his brother-in-law was Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish was a highway robber of bandits, and Rav Yochanan was Mekarev him. And Reish Lakish eventually became the great Talmud Chaver of Rav Yochanan. And whenever Rav Yochanan would say something, so Reish Lakish would ask him 24 kashas. And Rav Yochanan had to think and be machalik and answer and distinguish. And then the Gemara Bava Metzia, that story itself is a very strange and difficult story. The Gemara Bava Metzia talks about the idea that at one point, they were arguing about a certain halacha that was totally on how a ganav behaved. And Reish Lakish was chalik in Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan said, it's kishkaga hayetzi mipi hashalik. Rav Yochanan said, when it comes to a ganav, you would know. You would know. You're probably the expert in this. And this was very, very painful to Reish Lakish. And Reish Lakish said to Rav Yochanan, he said, you know, in my old career, I was a big guy, so I'm a big guy here. What's the difference? Why do I have to stick around here? Whatever it is. Anyway, eventually what happened was Reish Lakish died shortly thereafter. We don't know if it was for that reason or not for that reason. And Rav Yochanan became very, very sick and despondent. And they tried to replace Reish Lakish by another Talmud, who was also a very big Talmud Chacham. And whenever Rav Yochanan said anything, the Talmud gave 24 rayas that Rav Yochanan was correct. No? So Rav Yochanan started crying. He said he missed Reish Lakish. And he said, oh, what do you mean? Reish Lakish was bothering you. 24 questions, everything you said, 24 questions here. 24 rayas, you're right. So Rav Yochanan said, I don't need somebody to tell me I'm right. If I say it, I think I'm right. But when I was challenged, and I either had to be chozer sometimes, or at least come to a deeper understanding. So it is said that, and again, the whole story is a very, very sad story. Rav Yochanan, and the Gemara is mashma. It's hard to know how literal this is, that Rav Yochanan eventually descended into virtual insanity. It's hard to know exactly what that means. Maybe the Gemara means severe depression. It's not always clear in Chazal. Huh?
It says even crazy?
It more or less says even crazy, yeah. Those things can mean many different things, but the Mefarshim say, the Sforim say, marriage is very much the same idea. That although maybe not necessarily in the intellectual level of Torah, but in the emotional issues of life, the idea is that the other person sees things differently, and that enlarges me. I become greater because I can also see the world through that perspective, and vice versa with the spouse as well, with the wife as well. So all of this is being makabel tochacha, to be open, right? To be open. I mentioned this before, but again, the point comes up a lot. Now, this is not yet the Graz pshat. I mentioned the Graz is a very unusual pshat here, so I'll get to it. But I mentioned, I think, the story of the Sfas Emes. Sfas Emes, right, the founder, Gera Chassidus, Gora is its Polish pronunciation. Gora, Kala, something. There's another Polish word. You know, Polish words don't have any vowels in them, so there's a bunch of consonants. But Ger was the largest Hasidus in Poland. Now there's Ger here, but Ger was a very large Hasidus in Poland, by far the largest Hasidus in Poland. But Ger is not an ancient dynasty. I mean, none of Hasidus is that ancient, but Ger started in the middle of the 1800s, well after Hasidus had already established. It's 100 years after Chabad, for example, started. And the founder of the dynasty in Ger was the person known as the Chidushei HaRim, Rabbi Yitzchak Meir Alter. Rim is Yitzchak Meir Alter. He was a Talmud of the Kutzker Rebbe, etc., and he became a Rebbe in his own right. And he had 10 children, 10 sons. All 10 died. All 10 of his sons died in his lifetime. But the grandson of his youngest son was Yehuda Leib Alter. That's the person who became the Sfasemis. He became the second Rebbe of Ger. And since he lost his parents at a very young age, he was raised by his grandfather. So Sfasemis, in fact, much of the Torah we know from the Chidushei HaRim, you know, there is a safer Chidushei HaRim ala Torah, you may see, but the truth of the matter, Chidushei HaRim ala Torah is really a likut from the Sfasemis, because in the Sfasemis, virtually every other paragraph, he'll bring something from his grandfather. So somebody decided, as the way Sfarim were made today, actually it's not today, it's 50 years ago already, that you said, let's be malakate all of the stuff from the Chidushei HaRim and make a separate safer out of it. So that's the Chidushei HaRim ala Torah. By the way, Chidushei HaRim was a gevaldige gadol in classical halacha as well. In fact, it is said that he wrote, you know, the fourth chelik of Shulchan Aruch is the part that's least studied, although we do a lot of Gemara in it, because that's the chelik of Cheshin Mishpat, that's business law, contracts, partnership. Sometimes we learn Gemaras, but, you know, it's very rare, very few people go to halacha l'maisa in business ethics and partnership and all of these, you know. Baruch Hashem is a little better than it was, but for many, many years it was totally neglected. People just followed secular law, whatever it is.
Is it difficult?
Say again?
Why is it difficult?
Number one, it's too difficult. Number two, it's hard to know. People were Nisrachel. They thought business ethics, just whatever they want to do. In other words, people didn't have a sense that that was part of Torah. It's a big, big oblong. So it says the Chidushei HaRim wrote the equivalent of a Mishnah Brura on Cheshin Mishpat. Now again, this is an anachronism because the Mishnah Brura wasn't written yet, but the same way the Mishnah Brura took the Shulchan Aruch Arachayim on Tefillah and Shabbos, you know, and kind of gave you a relatively easier way to learn it instead of looking at the Shulchan Aruch with 104 shins, he actually did it on Cheshin Mishpat. He wrote the equivalent of a multi-volume Mishnah Brura on Cheshin Mishpat. But the story goes he burned. We don't have to say, but he burned it. He destroyed it. Because he thought that, or someone told him that people, I think someone complimented him, but he took it. Someone said, oh, with your sefer, no one's ever going to have to look at the Shach again. It's so wonderful, you know. And he saw that as an ominous message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. An ominous message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should not do something that would be mezalzel in the covet of the Shach. So the story goes, he burns the whole thing. So we don't have that at all. Say again? Well, you know, the Mishnah Berurah himself was made of Tanai. Now, you know, you'll notice in every Mishnah Berurah, you have the Be'er Heite and the Shari Tshuva. The Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim specified that the Mishnah Berurah cannot be printed without those Sfarim. And those Sfarim, I mean, the Be'er Heite was a kisser of the Magen Avraham in the time. So every, and besides Mishnah Berurah himself, everyone did the Magen Avraham in the time. But the Be'er Heite was just the Farish, a kisser of the Magen Avraham in the time. So that was part of it, part of it.
Then they won't look at the Magen Avraham. That was the whole...
Yeah, I understand. Okay. But this was a chesh. I mean, listen, that's not necessarily a cheshbon, but okay. But the Chidush Yerim made that cheshbon. Now, another story about the Chidush Yerim, which goes the other way around, is this is also a very, very cute story. The Minchas Chinuch was a Ger Chassid. Minchas was a Chassid Shiyit. He was a Talmud, not a Talmud, but he was a Chassid of the Chidush Yerim. And the Minchas Chinuch had Chidushim on all of Shas. And it was lost in a fire. There was a fire. Everything was lost. And the Minchas Chinuch was so tzebrachim, was so heartbroken. I mean, his life's work literally went up in flames, and everything. So he goes to Ger Rebbe and he says, you know, I don't know, my whole life, everything I've done my whole life, just destroyed. How do I begin again? So the Ger Rebbe says, isn't there anything left? Is there anything left at all? Anything? He says, there's nothing left. You know, I learned Sefer Achina for the past few years and I wrote down some things here and there. But there's nothing. It's nothing really worthwhile. Because Yerim says, but maybe publish it. You have something. You'll have some Sefer. That was the Minchas Chinuch. That was the Minchas Chinuch. Minchas Chinuch is considered to be, those of you that go to this year, it's considered to be one of the greatest Svarim of the past several hundred years in terms of Pilpul, in terms of Bikias, in terms of Havana. It's one of the very rare Pilatus Svarim that made it into the literature world. And again, you know, you'd be very surprised. You know, Michal Yaakov Weinberg, who lived in Slobodka, when he went to different parts of Europe, he was very surprised to hear about all sorts of Gedalim mamish that he had never heard about in Lithuanian yeshivas. You know, different types from different ways of learning. It's a different mahalach of learning. It's not that it wasn't accepted so much in the Litvashi yeshiva world, but there were great, enormous, giant Gedalim. So the Minchas Chinuch is actually one of the very, very few breakthrough svarim from the Polish Hasidic world that became totally accepted, even in Brisk and even in yeshivas that don't learn anything that's not according to a certain type of machshava. But the Minchas, but could you imagine what the Minchas Chinuch Chidushim would have been like if he considered the Minchas Chinuch to be a throwaway little trivial work? That's what it was. And so imagine what was lost. We don't even realize what was lost. Okay. But be this as it may, the reason I'm telling you this long story is I want to illustrate the idea of what it means to love Tochacha. The Chiddush Yerim, as they say, lost all ten of his children. In fact, he used to quote the Maimer of Rav Yochanan. This is actually very fascinating. Rav Yochanan also lost 10 children. And he used to carry one of the bones, of his 10th child, and he would tell people, this is the bone of my, people who were in mourning, this is the bone of my 10th child, you have to go on. Actually, in light of the earlier story I told you, it's talking very, very interesting. Losing the 10 children did not destroy him to the same degree as losing Reish Lakish. It's very interesting to compare the two things. But be it as it may, well, in the Gemara it's Rav Yochanan, but the Chiddush Yerim, Chiddush Yerim. So because of this, the Sfas Emes, who was the son of his youngest son, he raised him. The Chiddush Yerim raised the Sfas Emes from a very, very young age. So the Sfas Emes really was raised by the Chiddush Yerim. So the story goes, they used to learn together every day, and one day, when the Sfas Emes was 8 years old, he was late. He was late to the chavrusa because he had a real emergency. And the Chiddush Yerim was a very tough grandfather in this way, at least. He gave him mussar, he gave him teichacha, he was giving him a shmuz about how every second, you know, can never make up again, because even if you learn, you know, the next second, you don't have this second. Time cannot be, time is life. And Sfas Emes was just makabal, he was listening. So the Rebbetzin comes in and says to her husband, he says, why are you so tough on him? He had an emergency, a real emergency. So the Chiddush Yerim accepted that. And he asks Mechila from Leibish, the grandson, and then he says, why didn't you tell me? And he said, I wanted to hear the Zaydi's Musar. I wanted to hear the Zaydi's Teichacha. I wanted to be Makabal. Now, with most of us, again, I don't want to say most of us, but I'm just saying from you know, the way the perspective, the way many people are, even if we're in the wrong, we try to come up with all sorts of excuses why we did what we did. Here you had somebody that had an excuse, but he loved the teichacha so much, he wanted to hear it. He wanted to absorb the mussar. He wanted to be makabel the mussar. Right? So Rabbeinu Yaina says that actually is the simple translation. Ohev mussar. When you love mussar, that means you want to grow. You want to be challenged. You want to know what it is that you might have done wrong, and or conversely, just not necessarily what you did wrong, but how do you become better? You'll be a lover of knowledge. When you hate Teichacha, you'll remain a fool, because you'll never want to change, you'll never want to improve. Right? So the Pashut Pshat fits very well. But the Gra, and I'm not sure what the Hechrich is, The Gra gives what you might call an idiosyncratic translation of musar, and he says it does not refer to chastisement or rebuke, but it refers to yisurin. Yisurin is suffering, and this goes back to what Chazal say. There are three precious gifts that can only be acquired, Warren Brachos, three precious gifts that can only be acquired through Yisurin. One is Torah, and I'll try to explain what that means, Torah. The second is Eretz Yisrael, and the third is Olam Haba. That's kind of almost everything there is, but you know, we have Torah, Eretz Yisrael, Olam Haba. There's going to be Yisurin. Now, this was not meant to discourage you. This is actually meant to give you the opposite message, and that is that when you encounter difficulties, don't be despondent. This comes with the territory, meaning to say, now, what do we mean by Yisurin? Let me take the easiest one first. Eretz Yisrael be Yisurin, absolutely. Okay, maybe Daiz and Shiva, maybe you don't necessarily have the full brunt of it. But certainly, the process of living in Eretz Yisrael, as wonderful as it is, there are Yisurin. There's the dislocation of culture, if you're used to American culture, whatever it is. There is the famous or the infamous Israeli bureaucracy, which is kind of based on the Ottoman Empire, actually, a lot of the stuff. Like, I had to have a document notarized the other day. And, you know, so I went to a lawyer, got it notarized. Then I had to get it stamped by a court. I went to a court in which I waited 45 minutes to get into the building because there were a bunch of Arabs that they were checking for security. And then, of course, when I get to the place that has to stamp it, they can't stamp it because there's not an official red seal with wax and a ribbon that the notary didn't put on. So you go back to the notary and you get the wax and the ribbon, you know, whatever it is. This happens every day, numerous times. And yet, you know that through these Yisurin, a person is mekusher to Eretz Yisrael and the like. Torah too. Chazal say, another Maimer Chazal that's very famous, Divrei Torah only, Ein Divrei Torah miskaimem elo b'mi shememis atzmai. You have to be memis, yigia, Yisurin, the mental effort of trying to understand the Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, then you get to other levels, Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Right, it's very hard. It's not easy. Learning halacha, right? It's not an easy thing. So it's the yisurin and the yegia that we put in that give us a shaychus to Torah, but also enable you to taste the sweetness of Torah. You know, the old saying that they say by exercise, no pain, no gain, is true in really all areas, and certainly in ruchnius, that the more we work, the more we can see, the more Hashem shows us the sweetness. So Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and ultimately Olam Haba require the Yisurin. So the Gra learns, Ohev Musar does not mean one who loves chastisement, but rather it means one who is willing to stay with the game plan, so to speak, even when they have obstacles and difficulties, shows that he truly loves Das. Now Das is interesting. Das is not the same as Chochmah. Remember, we have Chachma. Chachma is the original insight. Bina is to understand something new from the existing idea. But Das is Chibor. Das is really spiritual connection. When Layeda Adam is Chava Ishte, right? Knowledge through marital Chibor. So too, Das Elikim is an emotional intimacy with Hashem through your learning of Torah. So one who is willing to stick to Yisurin, even though there is Yisurin, is a lover of Das. So again, it's an unusual use. Most of the time, as far as I know, although the Sheirish of Musar and Yisurin is the same Sheirish anyway, but most of the time we don't translate Musar to mean Yisurin. The Gra translates that. So of course, the question is, of course, that in a way that diminishes the matchup between the first half of the pasuk and the second half. The first half says, if you love Musar, you love Das. If you hate Tochacha, you're a fool. Now, like Rabbeinu Yonah, Ohev Musar means one who loves chastisement, and that is to be contrasted with the opposite, which is Sone Tochacha. But like the Gra, it's not a clear opposite anymore. So the Gra himself is Miyashiv. The Gra basically says like this. He says, an Ohev Das means like this. If you're willing to take difficulties in life and still go ahead, then you are a lover of true wisdom and connection with God. But it's going to the other extreme. But if you're so reluctant to have hardships that you can't even take a critical word, then you're truly a foolish. It's like going to an extreme, meaning there are some people who want such an easy way of life that not only are they not willing to have Yisurah, they don't even want to hear a word of criticism. So it's kind of moving to an extreme. What did Rabbi Sol Salanter used to say? They say, Rishim Rabbi Sol Salanter, how even in Ruchnius, people want it to be easy. You know, people don't want to work. He said that every person would like to know Shas. Okay, Baruch Hashem. And he says, that's an attainable goal. It is, you know, it may sound unbelievable, but you know, one could strive for that. One could say, that is a goal I have in my life. Okay, that's fine. Then he says, but people would like to know Shas learning just one night. That's pretty hard. The Vilna Gaon could learn Shas in one night. But then he says, people want to learn Shas in one night and get 8 hours of sleep that same night. He says, that he was masupik of even the Gra. The Gra could do. You know, the Gra never slept 8 hours. The Gra never slept 4 hours. You know, so he says, but people want instant gratification. Like, you know, when you were a kid, I don't know if you ever did this. You were studying for a test, so you put a book under your pillow. You know, through osmosis, the information will go in. You know, okay, you're not allowed to sleep on a Gemara, but we would like to put the Gemara, you know, under my head and just have it go in. We want everything to be easy. Bechlal, we live in a society where everything is easy. I mean, you know, we this is part of labor-saving devices. Although Lamaisa, I think they had a study that if you add together all the labor-saving devices, you know, washing machines and whatever it would be, to these people, for some reason, spend more hours doing things than they had to do. So somehow life got busier at the same time that we have all of this so-called labor-saving devices. Okay, so that's how the Gra learns that Musar here is a little shtickle unusual translation. It refers to Yisurin, which means the ability and the willingness to take hardships and to be miyageya. There's a Meiser of Chaim Shmulevitz you should tell over. Chaim Shmulevitz, who himself was a great, great gadol, and his father, he lost his father young, but his father was also a great Talmud Chacham, but Chaim Shmulevitz was actually the grandson of the Alter of Nevardik. It's interesting, so Chaim Shmulevitz is a very strong Nevardiker catcher. Now, the Alter of Nevardik's son-in-law, who became Rosh Hashiva, and he came there, was a Ravram Yatin. He actually came to Eretz Yisrael. He died in Eretz Yisrael. So the story goes, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz used to visit his uncle, Rav Avram Yafin. That was his uncle. And this was like the early 20th century, the early 1900s, you know, before World War I, or maybe after World War I. And as kids like to do, I mean, you know, again, if he'd be older, he wouldn't ask such a question. He would ask his uncle, he said, who's the best guy in the yeshiva? You can tell me, I'll keep it a secret. You know, tell me, who's the best baruch in the yeshiva? So Rami Yaffin didn't want to say, you know, who's the best person, but he said, well, this person is the biggest bucky, and this person is the biggest masmid, and this person is the biggest this and that. But so Chaim Shmulevitz said, but who's the real, the best of the best? So he pointed to another bachur. So this is a bachur. So he said, I don't understand. This person is the best in A, B, C, and you didn't mention this other person as the best in any of them. So why is he the best of the best if he's not best in any individual category? So basically, Rami Yaffin said, he is the person who works the hardest. He is the biggest miyageya. So maybe right now he's not the biggest bucky. Maybe right now he's not the biggest chur. But he is the biggest steiger. He's the biggest one who works. And that is the greatest of all. Now, I kept the name secret until now, but it happened to be the Steigler. This was the person who grew up to be Rabbi Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky. Stipler was a Talmud of Mevardik and later became a Rashiva of Mevardik. Stipler was not a Rashiva very long, but to the degree that he was an official Rashiva, which was in Mevardik Yeshiva in Europe, and then a little bit when he entered Israel, the Mevardik Yeshiva in Bnei Brak, but he retired relatively young as Rashiva. He didn't want to be Rashiva, but that was his godless. His godless was...
Who was this?
The Stipler. The Stipler. He was the greatest Mevakesh. And that's what we mean by Yisurin, your willingness to keep on going, no matter what. And that's that takes a great godless. Okay. Look at Pasuk Beis. No, I'm sorry.
Does that mean if you have two things to learn, should you choose a harder topic and not easy, or what?
Well, my Rosh Hashiva used to bring a raya. I think he got it from some Svarim that the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says, Mevatlin Talmud Torah. The Mikra Megillah. You're learning Torah, and it's time to read Megillah. So the Gemara says, Halacha Psuka is you stop your learning to hear Megillah. Right, so Megillah does take precedence over Talmud Torah because Persume Nisa. That's fine. But the Rashiva asked the question, why do you call it Mevatel in Talmud Torah? The Megillah is part of Tanakh. When I hear the Megillah, at least if I understand what I'm hearing, I'm learning the Megillah. So why do you call that Bitul Torah? Why is it Mevatel and Talmud Torah? So I think this is what the Alter Slobodka said, but I remember hearing it from my Rosh Hashiva, that Beritterman, that he said, you see from here that if you could spend your time learning something that would be require you to be Miyageya, and instead you do something superficial, that is also called a level of Bitul Torah. But, you know, it's not so much how to apply that, because the truth of the matter is, there are many, many things that you're supposed to learn and know, even if they're not, in other words, you have mitzvah of Yediyas HaTorah. Now, in your mitzvah of Yediyas HaTorah, you are mechuyev to learn things that might not be so difficult, but you have to learn them. You have to learn them, you have to know them. So to say, I only learn hard things, that wouldn't be right either, because you have to learn the other things as well. But if you're doing an easy thing as an excuse not to be the Yageya, then that's called a getter of Bittul Torah. Of course, the Chazon Ish said, somebody asked the Chazon Ish about learning an easier Masechta. So the Chazon Ish says, I'm not aware of any easier Masechta. There's no easier Masechta. Okay. All right. Okay. Let's look a little at Pasuk Beis. Tov. So Tov is a noun here. Tov means a good person, a person that is Tov. Yafik Ratzon Me'ashem. Right? Yafik is actually interesting. We're more used to this in Aramaic than in Lashon HaKodesh, right? We know Nafik, right? Nafik in Aramaic is to go out. Right? Go out. Like even the phrase Nafka Mina, that which comes out from it, meaning the difference. The practical difference. So normally in Lashon HaKodesh, the verb going out is yatsa, vayetze, yatsa. But occasionally, the Aramaic actually is based on Hebrew, occasionally there is a verb yafik. So yafik means a good person, a tzaddik. Yafik will draw forth ratzon, grace from Hashem. Meaning a tzaddik is mamshich, brings into the world goodness and favor. Ritzera ritzon is favor from Hashem. The ish mizimos, but a man of schemes, meaning he always tries to find ways to get around the system of Hashem. Interesting. It's an interesting phrase because it might mean, although the Gemara doesn't say this part, the word ish mizimos doesn't necessarily mean Russia. It doesn't necessarily mean a person that's sinning, but it means a person who puts in his energy to find ways to get out of serving Hashem. Now somebody once said a wonderful thing. It's a little bit of a biting criticism, but he said it was a criticism of modern Orthodoxy. I don't mean to criticize modern Orthodoxy per se, because within modern Orthodoxy there are many people. Many people have great Yerushalayim too. I don't mean to stigmatize a whole group. But the comment is a very good comment. He said, you know, the problem with a lot of modern people today is that instead of having 613 mitzvos, they have 613 problems they got to get around. Now, you understand what that means? It's a certain attitude in which a person might have, and again, it could be we're initial in this too. My point is not to draw a we-them comparison, just to think about this. That, you know, sometimes a person's mental attitude is, I have goals in life. My goal is I want a good job. My goal is I want to make a lot of money. But nebuch, I got these things called kashrus and shabbos and things. So I got to work around them to kind of make sure that they don't interfere with what I do. Now, on one end, that's still a madrega because he still says I'm going to keep cutting the deep shabbos. But basically, he's looking at them as problems to get around. Like the Shabbos app, right? You heard about this? Somebody invented, and I really didn't look into the details, but you know, it sounds conceptually very interesting. Somebody invented what they claim, they don't have any haskamas yet, that's the problem, but they claim it's a permissible way to text message on Shabbos. And they develop, and again, I mean, the truth of the matter is, a lot of good thought, as a Limud HaTorah project, it's not a bad thing, because they actually thought about how to avoid this malacha, and this malacha, and this malacha, and this malacha. They even have an ad, where they have one guy sending a text message saying, hey, are you coming to the Kiddush today, you know, are we going to learn today at 4 o'clock? They want to make it, okay, whatever, they want to kind of make it, it's a way of, you know, I can encourage my chavrusa to learn with me, whatever. Now, here's the thing. Let's assume that you invent a mechanism that doesn't violate any of the lamites melachos or isurei drabanan. And that's a big if, and I'm not, you know, obviously they have no haskamas at all yet, so one can't say anything. But still, is that the idea? If you look for ways to do all these things on Shabbos instead of spending, you know, learning, davening, we've been giving shmuzin for years, maybe hundreds and maybe thousands of years, about how Shabbos, you know, is the time to be menutzak from this mechanical world so you can spend time. So now, instead, you find ways to bring that world back in. Right? I mean, this concept of the spirit of Shabbos. Okay, so in the 1950s, the challenge was, you know, putting your TV on a timer, now whatever it is. Now we have more sophisticated ways of bringing in the world of technology. So the emissary is, so this is what you might call ish mizimot. Ish mizimot is not a person who breaks off, but a person who looks for every type of loophole so they don't have to change their life. In other words, halacha should have the minimum impact on my life so I can do what I really want. Let's relegate Torah and mitzvot to be an insignificant little thing so I can do my real business. Problem is, of course, that life is exactly the opposite. The real business is Torah and mitzvahs. I also have to work. I also have to do those things too. Right? So that's why I think it's very meduyik. Instead of saying the phrase, Russia says, ish mizimos, the man that's always looking for ways out, yarshia. Now, yarshia can mean will become a Russia. That's one translation. But Yarshia Lavdaka means that, or Yarshia just means will not be successful in getting Ratzon Me Hashem. Meaning, Ratzon Me Hashem means a person receives favor of God. God has nachas in him. And the person who's not in that situation, Yarshia, he has not been successful. Meaning, the Eibishter has no nachas from him. And yeah. He's keeping the letter of the law, but obviously he's trying to get out of everything to whatever degree that he can. So here, the Gra, sometimes in the Bir HaGra, again, and as you know and we've said many times, the actual language of the Gra's commentary on Mishlei is not the Gra's language. The author of this was a Talmud of the Gra, Rav Menachem Mendel of Shklov, and that's why you sometimes find the same Vort repeated in different svarim written by Talmidim of the Gra in different ways. It's not always the same thing. But sometimes he brings a bit of a digression to illustrate this. And he starts off with an agadata in Maseches Bava Basra. It's worthwhile to talk about this. I got us a little bit. And this is one of the most famous and difficult to understand Agadas and Shas. This is a bunch of stories about the Amora Rabba Bar Bar Chana. These are called the Rabba Bar Bar Chana stories. And they are in Perek Hay of Bava Basra. In fact, if you're interested in pursuing this in depth, if you know the English book by Rav Aaron Feldman, The Juggler and the King. Have you seen that book around? It's a very, very excellent book. This is an adaptation of the Vilna Gaon's commentary on the Rabba Bar Bar Chana Agadatas. Now here, Rav Nachman only brings one little comment. He doesn't bring the whole thing, because the Vilna Gaon has a whole sefer. Again, it's around two-thirds Kabbalah, so it's not an easy thing at all, but in which he explains the Rabba Bar Bar Chana stories. Because literally, they are very fantastic stories. They're like what you might call Paul Bunyan-esque stories about gigantic monsters and everything else. All right, so if we're told to accept them as literal, we would accept them as literal, but the Gra himself says that these are symbolic stories, and they're not meant to be taken totally literally. Yeah.
But a quick question, is it possible, because I think I recall this that you were saying in one of your shiurim, is it possible to still like be a tzaddik, or like be like at least like a person that serves God? I'll say a tzaddik, let's say, like even without divine help? Or that's not possible at all?
Well, the Gemara says it's impossible. The Gemara says without Hashem helping you, the Yetzer Hara is going to always overwhelm you. So you need divine help all the time.
Maybe yeah. You don't realize it.
That's right.
I'm not saying me in general. I'm just asking in general. Cause I remember him saying.
Whatever it is.
You need Hashem's help.
I'm talking about me.
But Hashem is there. Hashem is there to help you. Hashem is there to help you all the time.
Okay.
So let me just show you the Agadita that he brings here, and then he applies it to the pasuk. It's a bit of a digression, but it's a fascinating shot. This is what the Gemara says. Rabbi Chana gives, again, this is part of 10 different stories about him, but this is one of the stories, only one of them. Amar Le'Yehutaya, an Arab once said to me, Ta V'Achvi Lach, come and I will show you, Hecha Denashka Ara Urakia, I will show you the place where heaven touches the earth, heaven kisses earth. I will show you the place where the Shamayim meets the Eretz. Okay, so basically what it says over there is that he put his basket down. The Arab showed him a certain place. Rabbi Bar Chana put his basket down to daven mincha. And when he finished davening mincha, his basket wasn't there anymore, because this is like heaven and earth, and everything is turning, so it's like the heaven turned and his basket went away. He didn't know what happened. He asked the Arab, are there ganavim here? And the Arab said, well, this is just the Shamayim in its rotation, so if you wait a little bit longer, the rotation will bring back your basket. Right? This is the story that the Gemara recounts. So here is what the Gra explains. The Gra says that the Taya, the Arab, so to speak, is symbolic of the Yetzer Hara. And when the Yetzer Hara says, come and I will show you where heaven meets earth, the Yetzer Hara is telling the person, listen, I'll give you a plan where you can get both Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Meaning to say, you know, you're hearing from your Rebbes, you're hearing that, you know, you got to give up the joys of Olam Hazeh to learn and do mitzvahs. I tell you what, I'll give you a deal where you can get the riches of Olam Hazeh. Right, that's the idea of kissing. Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba together. And he quotes a Gemara. The Yetzer Hara, you know, even quotes a Gemara here. There's an interesting Gemara, again, which is not explained here, but there's a Gemara that says in Maseches Brachos, Gadol Hanana miyagia kapav, yoser miyiras shamayim. That means the person who gains, who benefits from his own physical labor, yagia kapav, the one who works for a living, the one who earns his parnasa, is greater than one who even fears Hashem. I'm just quoting Gemara. Gadol hanana miyagia kapav, Yoser Meirah Shemayim, because for one person it says Ashrecha for the Yireh Shemayim, and for the Yeh, it's Ashrecha V'Tovlach. Now, that's a big question. I mean, what are you telling me? Do you mean to say, just reading that statement, that the Nenem Yegiyah Kapov, who's not a Yireh Shemayim, is greater than a Yireh Shemayim? That doesn't make sense. Person of, right? Elamai, it means he's Nenem Yegiyah Kapov and he's a Yireh Shemayim? Well, of course he'll be greater than a Yireh Shemayim because he has that. So what exactly is the point that it's making? But however we understand that Gemara, Chazal were clearly mishabeach, the idea of Nana Miyagia Kapav. Parnasa. It was a big, big thing. So, the Yetzer Hara uses that Maimer Chazal to tell a person, why, he's perverting it, why are you depriving yourself? You know, go into Wall Street, you know, go into arbitrage business, go into hedge funds, whatever it is. And that way you can become Nana Miyagia Kapav, and you'll be greater than a Yireh Shemayim. And Rabba Bar Bar Chana is actually saying that he was falling for it. I put my basket, right, the basket to be filled with parnasa. I put my basket on that window, and I davened. Because again, I know that parnasa requires tefillah. Right, that's what he's saying. In other words, and again, there's another Gemara that says, Ma yasa adam v'yasher, how does a person get wealthy? So the first answer is, yasek b'yamuna, do business honestly. And then they say, well, many people do business honestly and they don't get parnasa, ela yispala. By the way, a little aside, because one Gemara is reminiscent of another Gemara. You know, the Gemara in Shabbos says that when a person dies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks you a number of questions. And the very first question is, Nasasa v'nasata b'yamuna. Now, that literally means, did you conduct your business with honesty? That's the very first question. But the truth of the matter is, there are two translations for yamuna here. One is, did you conduct your business honestly? The second, did you conduct your business believing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amuna, was the source of your parnasa? Two different translations of that sentence. But I hope you can see that the two translations are the same message. Because if I believe that the source of my parnasa comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then it's impossible for me to believe that by breaking HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, I'm going to come out ahead in the long run. Maybe in the short run things can happen. So in a sense, if one has emunah in Hashem, you will have integrity in the way you conduct your business. So similarly here, when the Gemara in Nida says, how does a person become successful? Yaseg b'yamuna. It has the same two meanings. Be honest. Have emuna. By the way, Derech Agav, though, Taisus asks the Kasha. Because in the order of those questions, let me mention the questions first, then we go over. So question number one is, Nasasa v'nasata b'yamuna. Hashem is very kind to us. He gives us the final exam. He gives us the questions of the final exam ahead of time. Imagine a teacher gives you the questions. You mamish know what you have to study for. So question number one is, Nasasa v'nasata b'yamuna. Did you conduct your business with honesty or with faith in Hashem? The second question is, Kavata itim l'tayra. Did you set aside regular times for the study of Torah? The third question is, Asakta b'pirya v'rivya. Did you try to have a family? Were you Isaac in trying to have children? The fourth question is, Sipisa li Yeshua. Did you eagerly yearn for Mashiach? Not did you believe in Mashiach. Did you yearn for Mashiach? The fifth question is, Pilpalta b'chachma. Were you mafalpel? Did you try to engage in an in-depth discussion of wisdom? And the sixth question is, bikashta das, were you a seeker of knowledge of Hashem, which actually means emotional connection with Hashem? These are the six questions. The fifth and the sixth in particular are a bit more vaguer than the other ones. Now, Tosfos asks a Kabbalah Gakasha. Based on these six questions, the question of Talmud Torah is question number two. The first question is business. The second question is Torah. So Tosfos asks the Kasha, there's another Gemara that says, Ein techilas dino shel adam. The beginning of a judgment on a person is on Talmud Torah. So is Talmud Torah first or second? So Tosfos wants to answer, it's the second question, but it's the first thing Hashem judges you on. Although it's hard to know the story for that, he says. Yes, the second question you're asked, it's the first thing Hashem is going to give a din b'cheshbon. But that's a shver teretz. If it's the first thing, then let it be the first question. So some of the forshim want to learn, gevaldige teretz, that instead of these being six different questions, they are all about Talmud Torah. Why is this? Because each Seder of Mishnah has a nickname. So he says, Seder Zeroyim, and this the Gemara itself says elsewhere, Seder Zeroyim is called Seder Emunah, the Seder of faith. Because the farmer knows he has to have faith in the rain and Hashem's Hashtasha. So when it says, Nasasav Nasata Bi Emunah, did you involve yourself in Emunah, means did you learn Seder Zeroyim? Huh? Now, the second Seder is Moed. Moed means appointed times. Kavata itim. Did you learn Moed? Asakta b'piria v'ribya. Seder Nashin. Tzipisa l'Yeshua. Did you look for Yeshua? Seder Nezikin is called Yeshuos. And the reason is because the Chorban happened because of Sinas Chinam. Seder Nezikin teaches us Bein Adam l'Chavero, how to behave. It brings Shalom. And it's called Seder Yeshua. So the Gemara says, Seder Yeshua. Pilpalta b'chachma, Seder Kachim is called Chachma. And Das, which is on its highest level, Ruach HaKodesh, is connected to Tahara, purity, because Tahara brings a person to Ruach HaKodesh. So according to this, Taisus's Kasha is the Gamri Miyosha. Taisus's Kasha is the first thing is on Dibrei Torah. Yeah, all six questions are on Dibrei Torah. It's a tremendous terrace. But what's interesting here is that you see that Hashem is going to expect us to kind of learn all of those orders, meaning to say there is a chiyuv to go through all of these things, which again is something else that would be added to the factor of learning the in, right? Learning the in selectively as opposed to the need to cover. You do need to cover these areas. Yeah. The sixth one says, were you a seeker of knowledge? Now, Das. Das, in its highest level, is Ruach HaKodesh. And we are taught that through purity, you achieve Ruach HaKodesh. And therefore, Taharos is a Pesach too.
That was Kedusha.
Huh?
That was Kedusha, at least according to Ramchal.
Yeah, but Kedusha is Ruach HaKodesh. Kedusha is that last level. So before Kedusha is Tahara. Tahara brings you to Kedusha.
I'm not saying that you're wrong.
You can say that I'm wrong.
No, but I'm saying that says you're on Kedusha.
Yeah, you're correct. There are different gears. There are different gears. So the truth is, the Ramchal had a particular gear. There are different gears. So this is a statement. This is a statement of Rabbi Pinchas Ben Yoyer.
Yeah.
And there are different statements. Yeah. And many have the Rambam's girsa is Tahara brings the Ruach HaKodesh, brings the Kedusha.
Oh, you were saying according to the Rambam, I'm
giving this a very good record.
Okay.
When's the Gemara? Sorry.
The Gemara itself? There are different girsas in the Gemara.
Where?
The end of Saita. Is there a Masechet Saita? Yeah,
Rabbi, what about putting on tefillin in the morning? What about Lashon Hara? What about
that will come later. Hashem is going to ask everything. It's the only question of what's the order. Hashem will ask everything. There's no question. Of course we're going to give a din b'cheshbon. I mean, this is what they say. They say that...
So let's go back to the story.
So what happened is the Yetzer Hara, which is the Arab, says, I'll give you a way that heaven and earth are kissing. Be Isaac and Parnassa, become a big businessman, do a lot of money. That way you'll be Makayim, the directive of Gadol Hanenem, Yegia Kapav, Yosem Yerushamayim. And Rabba Bar Bar Chana is taken in by this, he's saying. And he puts down his basket, as if it were, yeah, my basket will be full. But he knows he still needs Avedas HaTzvila. But then his basket gets carried away. And he doesn't understand why it gets carried away. So here, the Gra explains that the idea is the following. And this is very, very complicated. On one hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decrees what our parnasa is. But the parnasa then has to go through many, many channels till it goes to earth. And there are channels called mazalos, the constellations. Right, there are different types of angels that are in charge. And the angels have a certain autonomy, not as Bali Bechira, but as part of their machinery, in which things can be blocked, meaning even if you're a person who theoretically is deserving of a certain parnasa, but you might still be subject to the mazel unless your merit is so great that you break down the machinery of the mazalos. Which means you can be deserving enough to get a bracha, but it won't come to you due to the interference of mazalos unless you have a super level of zechus. And that really was the message, that you had to devote yourself to Torah, etc., in order to have a sechus. And that's the meaning of this pasuk. Again, it's a bit of a reading into the pasuk. Toiv, only a person that is 100% mekusher to the avodas Hashem is guaranteed that he will get the grace of Hashem, because in any other configuration, as good as it is, you run an interference with the mazalos and these intervening forces. Now, we do say, Ein Mazel Yisrael. The Jewish people are not subject to Mazel. That is understood by some to mean we are subject to Mazel. We have the koach to break the Mazel, but that may require an extraordinary zechus. Okay, so that's how he's learning that. And then he has one other point, Ratzon Me'ashem. Now, this is an interesting issue. Ratzon is desire. So a good person will bring out the desire of Hashem. That's a little difficult. It should say a good person will bring out the goodness of Hashem, the blessing of Hashem. So he makes the point, the Gomagon makes the point, that it is always Hashem's desire to give us good. But there are going to be blockages. Hashem made a universe of blockages of the channel. And to unblock the blockages, you need to be a Tov, and then you'll get what Hashem wants to give you anyway. Hashem wants to give us Tov, but we have to be Roy. Hashem created a world where we have to have some merit, because otherwise, as the Ramchal says, it's the bread of embarrassment, the bread of shame, right? And then, of course, there's also Hashem made mazalos. Again, the issue of mazalos is a very complicated issue, because mazalos seems to indicate that even if between you and God you're deserving of something, the mazel may block it unless you have an extra spiritual koach in which you can break the mazel. And that could be a much greater madrega than you needed to be entitled to the gift in the first place. And that's how he interprets that a tov yafik ratzon mi Hashem.
I prayed before I headed about 70 minutes ago, and I left the building. Is it possible to have a snack with you now?
Of course, yeah, please, yeah, yeah.
No, I'm saying, am I allowed to, if I left the premises, can I have, if I rest here and I eat, can I have another?
Yes, yeah, you can eat it here. You can eat it here. Yeah, you have bread with you?
Yeah, sir.
Okay, thanks. Okay.
Rabbi Yom, it looks like gambling. The whole idea of that you could have best of both worlds and the heaven kisses the earth. It looks like a gambling that just, you know, that a person, like, let's say, bets on horses or something, or stock market. Or, you know, it looks like
Again, Rabbi Bar Chana is describing that this is the Maisa Yetzer Hara. That's what he's saying. In other words, according to the Gra's interpretation of this Agada, he's really talking about a struggle. We don't know exactly when he had the struggle, but a struggle that he went through, in which he understood that in order to break the hashkacha of the mazel, you know, you have to devote yourself even to Hashem in a higher
level. The whole idea of the basking, just leaving, it's like a roulette wheel. Like,
right.
It feels like,
right,
like, you know,
right,
you could just,
right,
end,
right.
Just the basking.
The mazel, just take it. That's right. That's right. That's right. Okay. Okay, let's do a little bit more.
Sorry, what was the idea that the Yitzhak said that the bus is coming back?
How did you learn that? 1 second. Derech Hilucha, it's Nignav, Nitna Liacher. Banich of Mazel Talia. Yeah, so he's saying, you know, Mazel can also change, meaning basically, so now the Yitzhak switches gears and he says, okay, you're not going to get it in this world, but you'll get it in the world to come. But again, in other words, this is so bizarre, meaning the Yetzer Hara's first taina is, you'll get everything in this world. When that doesn't happen, he said, well, you know, you're still an enemy of Yidya Kakov, you'll get your reward in Olam Bo. So Rava says, basically, you're talking about Olam Haba, so why should I pursue this right anyway? There's more Olam Haba the other way. It's like the Yetzer Hara becomes firm all of a sudden when it suits his purpose. Okay.
I was confused because if Rabbi said between you and Hashem you deserve it, but a mazel who put the mazel there to block it?
No, Hashem put the mazel there, but we're saying, I mean, for example, the Gemara says in Brachos, Rava, the greatest Amoraim, that Rava had very, very difficult life. He died young, but children died. He was poor. Many, many different types of sufferings. And the Gemara says it's because he was born under a bad mazel. And we don't understand, but as great as Rava was, he could not break the mazel. Meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu created... Now again, you have to understand, a mazel is not a conscious creature. It's not some person-like thing that's doing things to you. But mazel essentially means that there is a natural order. It might be connected to genetics. It might be connected to the influences of the planets, although science does not understand that. But the Rambam also disagreed with that. But Chazal seemed to use their Lashon, at least, talks about influences of planets, planetary influences. Meaning there's a certain teva in the world. In other words, let's take it in a lot of ways. Let's say a person gets run over by a car. God forbid. A person gets shot. Was it the pshat that God decreed that he be shot? Or was it the pshat that he gets shot because he's in the wrong place at the wrong time and he didn't have the zechus at that moment for Hashem to save him? That's very different than saying Hashem decreed that he died. So mazel, in a sense, means Hashem is allowing nature to operate the way nature operates, unless you have an extraordinary zechus to break it. Again, some might, I mean, I'm not sure if this would help people. Some people consider that an explanation for evil in the world, that it's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a Holocaust, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu let bad people do bad things, because we did not have an extraordinary zechus to overcome the decisions of free will. Now, that's not mazel, that's free will, but it's the same idea, meaning, according to this idea, not everything that happens in the world is a direct decision that Hashem is making at that moment. Well, it's always a decision, but the decision can sometimes be, let the forces of nature do what they do. He made the forces of nature, but again, it would be similar in that way Hashem, let's say, made mountains, right? He made the earth. He made tectonic plates. And based on what he made, so every 1,000 years, there's going to be an earthquake, there's going to be a volcano. So according to this idea, Hashem didn't decree that the volcano would occur. In other words, Hashem made things so that these things will happen. But Hashem did not decree at that given moment. It just, he created forces. And as the forces interact, based on the laws that Hashem created, there are going to be these consequences. Now again, this is very, very foreign than the way the Mekubalim speak. The Mekubalim speak constantly of the notion of Hashem directing the universe every single second. But that would be very difficult to fit with the idea of mazalos. Mazalos seems to indicate a world of nature that runs on its own, which Hashem can change and block, but when he doesn't, it just happens, right? So that's a big kasha. That's a very, very difficult kasha. And that is everything decreed by God second by second by second? Or does Hashem create forces, and the forces then kind of just operate on their own until Hashem chooses to terminate them? That would be the problem of mazel versus hashgacha prajus. Now the Rambam, by the way, clearly says, absolutely, that hashgacha prajus is not, it's an amazing thing. I mean, because, you know, if somebody would say this in a Beis Yaakov class, they would be called an apikoros. But the Rambam's view is not even taught today, but the Rambam absolutely says, hashgacha prajus is a madrega limited to tzaddikim, or when Hashem answers our tefillos. But normally, things that happen to us are not because Hashem decreed them. They just happen because they happen. Because Hashem put us in a natural world. We can get run over if we don't look where we're going, etc. As opposed to the notion of Hashgacha. That's absolutely the Rambam. The Rambam's in the Mor Nebuchadnezzar. He says many times, Hashgacha Pratis is limited to Tzaddikim. And I would add, in fact, that's what he says. I would just add, the time of the Rambam would be Modeh, that through tefillah, it could be zayfah d'ashkacha prajus. Otherwise, there would be no point of davening. So I assume the Rambam is minded to that. But the Rambam says the default setting is, you know, you're just where you are and things happen. But as I say, the Mekubalim absolutely reject that idea. And I think that's become the mainstream Havana of how we try to understand Hashem. Yeah, I understand, but that's not what the Rambam says. And then you have to understand mazel according to that. If Hashgacha Pratis is b'chaleis, what is the kayach of mazel? Why does it continue to have any form at all? And by the way, some are mechalek between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. Some say in Chutz La'aretz does not Hashgacha Pratis in Eretz Yisrael. There is. Yeah.
Rabbi, the whole idea that Hashem controls everything and nothing could happen without the direct will of Hashem. It feels very comforting that the Hashem is in control of everything.
Yeah.
In a way, maybe the people decided to look at that, accept that point of view much. Maybe that point of view became accepted much more. It's because it's more comforting. Not because it's like the damage is just
well,
the other side is
I think I think your point is a valid point, and that is certainly one of the ways that people get chizuk in life is to always know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved in their lives. So in a sense, it became a more popular idea. Popular doesn't mean it's true. On the other hand, the great Mekubalim did say it was true, and they understood the ways of Hashem in ways that we don't.
How does the Vilna Gaon view on this?
It's hard to say that. I mean, the Vilna Gaon, on one hand, was a phenomenally great Mekubal. In fact, the Vilna Gaon was greater in Kabbalah than he was in Halacha. You know how great he was in Halacha. But on the other hand, he talks a lot about the notion of mazalos blocking the Shefa of Hashem, right? So that would seem to indicate the Rambam's idea. Yeah.
Why are those two ideas mutually exclusive? Like, I mean, it seems completely possible that, Hashem runs everything. I mean, like a person who has a plan, to go on a trip.
Well, yeah, but the problem is that what the Vilna Gaon is saying here, for example, is that a person lives a certain way and he is deserving of receiving a certain reward from Hashem. He is deserving, but he will not be able to get that reward because there are blockages in the universe not based on his merit. His merit entitles him to this reward, but there are blockages based on the constellations, based on the mazel, based on when he was born, etc. So the question becomes, if everything is just Hashem's decision, what sense does it even mean to make to say, yes, you have earned your reward, and I'm ready to give it to you, but it's the pipeline is blocked. So let Hashem block the unblock the pipeline. Unless we have to assume that, no, Hashem also created a certain natural order which functions, and to terminate the natural order, you need something greater than the merit to earn the reward itself. In other words, let's just make up numbers. I'm going to make up numbers. Let's say you need, you know, if you have 1,000 points, you're entitled to get a certain reward. But if the pipeline happens to be blocked, you need 5,000 points to unblock the pipeline. That's what the Vilna Gaon is saying. Meaning, you have this prize waiting for you in heaven, but it can't get to earth because the pipeline is blocked. Oh, you want to unblock the pipeline? Well, that's another charge. You need a lot more for that. Right? I mean, that's what is being described here. But that only makes sense if we assume that this like pipeline is a permanent thing that has its own cycle. If the pipeline itself depends on my merit, then as soon as I earn the $1,000, the pipeline ought to be clear.
Right.
1,000 points.
So Hashem could give a person, let's say, $1,000, and then create this blockage in constellations that will block, let's say, $900. So a person could only get
$100. That's right. But then it's, no. On the other hand, nothing goes away. It remains in Olam Haba. Maybe it's even in a better form. Meaning, anything that doesn't go to the pipeline is credited to your Olam Haba account, right? So you don't lose it, but it just means you're not going to get. Because remember, the Yetzer Hara is trying to tell the guy, you can get it in this world. And the short answer is, well, you're not going to get it in this world. It'll be saved in Olam Haba. Well, Olam Haba, then I'll stick with the learning. Because whatever I'll get for the Gashmius is not going to be as much as the learning. So I'll stick with the learning, right? That's kind of the Shaka Vatari here.
So since this money is being blocked from Shemayim, in that case, why doesn't Hashem just say, oh, I'll just give you $100? And why give a lot and then block it and a person gets a...
Well, because Hashem has to keep an exact cheshbon of what a person is deserving of. So if you're deserving of 1,000, then even if you're only going to get 100, we have to write you down. You're deserving of 1,000. It's a credit. It's a rain check.
Because also, it's in a way, it's a caution. Another person might say, oh, I'm only going to get 300, but my blockage is only $50. So in a way, I'm getting more than double than you.
That's correct.
Because my blockage...
That's correct.
So who's better... Who's better off?
Well, again, Zolom Habar. In other words, you're right. Indeed, it's not unique to say that sometimes Rishayim do better in Olam Haba, in Olam Hazeh, rather. Right? So it can happen. It can happen. Okay.
All right, quick question. You know how they say when you're a little bit off topic, you know when you say you speak Lashon Hara about someone, right?
Yep.
Does that mean that they take all your mitzvahs and you can take all that abroad? Yeah, I know that. Is that also the Torah that you learned, or involves everything?
Well, first of all, that statement, you know, that people say that if I speak Lashon Hara on somebody, he gets all my mitzvos and I get all his averos. I mean, you've heard that statement. That's actually not in the Chazal. It's interesting. The question is what the makor is. There is a good makor. The makor is the Chayvus HaLevavos, and the Chayvus HaLevavos says it. It's not clear what his makor is, although if he said it, we can assume that there was some source of that, the Chovas HaLevavos. But what it means is not so pashut either. Certainly, see, we don't really know the nature of schar. I mean, certainly he'll get the reward, but he can't get the shleimus of the nefesh that someone got through Torah and even through mitzvahs. There's a certain perfection of the soul that if you didn't do it, you can't get it. So there's reward. There's reward for mitzvahs. But
you don't lose all your reward for the learning.
It's not possible to say that you lose everything. Even by Yisachar and Zebulun, you have the kind of the same problem, right? Zebulun who supports Yisachar, but gets the reward, but he can't have the shlemus of the nefesh. How is the father shlemus of the nefesh? By the way, you were asking this. I just came across. Many of you may have heard of Rav Asher Weiss, a very, very big Talmud Chacham in Ramot. So he came out with a volume of Shelos Atshuvos. So I see that he has two or three Shelos on Yisachar and Zebulun partnerships. And he actually brings three opinions, right? What's the problem Yisachar and Zebulun partnership? Yisachar is the one who learns, and Zebulun supports Yisachar, and Zebulun enters a partnership where it's a 50-50 partnership. You can make it any percentage, but typically it's 50-50. So what does it mean to have that Zebulun gets 50% of the reward of Yisachar? So there are actually three shitas he brings, what that means. Very interesting. Shita number one, which to me at least is the most logical, is Yisachar is not going to lose his reward in Olam Haba because Zebulun supported him. It just means Hashem is going to double it. So you wind up, which means Yisachar gets this tremendous reward for learning. So Hashem is going to give the same reward to Zebulun. So now it's 50-50 in the sense that of the total reward, they're equal, but Yisachar's chelek has not become diminished by taking that financial support. That's I like that one. On the other hand, because otherwise it's very schwer that the person who learns should lose. Rav Moshe Feinstein says nothing. Rav Moshe Feinstein says it's a business partnership. And if it's a business partnership, the total schar of Yisachar is going to be cut in half.
I agree. I don't know.
Now, based on that, it would only make sense to enter the partnership if, as a result of the financial assistance, you're going to learn twice as much. Although I gave you a svara that maybe there's a countervailing zechus Yisachar will get in helping Zebulun have that mitzvah. Maybe that'll be an extra reward.
Okay. All right, we'll find out one day.
Yeah. But there's a third opinion of the Aruch Chaim he brings. This is a very literal opinion. He says, what do we say? Zebulun gets half of the reward of Yisachar. So he learns this way. He learns Yisachar gets 100% and Zebulun gets 50%. Mm-hmm. In other words, let's talk about points. Just make up a number. If Yisachar's learning is worth 1,000 points, so he brings in the Aruch Chaim, Yisachar gets 1,000 points, and Zebulun gets 500 points. That's what he says. In other words, it's not that you take the 1,000 and split it in half. It just means Zebulun gets half of what Yisachar gets. Right? I've actually never heard that pshat before, but that's how he learns the Yisachar-Zebulun partnership. In a way, that makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense, because it is still makir, that the one that was miyageya, and the one that, in other words, yes, Hachzakas Torah is tremendously important, but it's makir that, you know, the guy who gives a lot of money, but then, you know, watches TV and goes to the movies and whatever it is, I mean, shouldn't get the same schar.
If he funds a whole yeshiva, then he would.
Huh?
If he funds a whole yeshiva, then he'll get 100 times 500.
Maybe so. That might be so.
Even
that
he watches
so it may, you know, it may add up. But at least intrinsically, you're not going to say that if I support the Talmud Chacham, I'm exactly the same.
Right.
Not exactly the same. I get 50% of what he gets. That's what I get. Yeah.
Right. If a person supports the learning, let's say, of 2,000 people, right, and for, let's say, for 50 years, and at the end, if he gets half of their learning, that gets, it's like getting 1,000.
It's a lot. That's right.
When he goes upstairs, he gets like 1,000, as if like he gets more than
that much we're willing to say. All I'm saying is that on a one-to-one basis, you can't say that the machzik Torah is equal to the one who's learning. But if he was mezakeh many many people, he gets a little or a lot, 50% of each of those people. That's going to be a tremendous thing. How did he pass? I didn't finish it yet. I just read the first page. Yeah.
I really like what the Aruch Chaim said, because at the same time, he gets it's a business partnership, like what Moshe Feinstein said, right?
Yeah.
So he gets 50%, but at the same time, he did sit there and learn, so he should get the full 100%, and he should get the 50%.
That's what I would say, but Rav Moshe says not. Rav Moshe says it's a partnership, and the Sochar has given up 50% of the Sochar. That's what Rav Moshe says. Rav Moshe looks at it like a partnership. See, again, the machlokas basically is, are you dealing with... I mean, Rav Moshe looks at Yisachar Zevulun as a business partnership. Now, in a business partnership, if I earn, if you're my partner, if I earn $1,000, we split it, 500, 500. But Moshe Feinstein says this is a business partnership. It's different than Stamach Sakastar. I mean, that's why Rav Moshe had a whole point. You have to have a formal agreement written. See, many people learn, Yisachar Zevulun is just another way of saying, you know, I support Torah. Rav Moshe says, no, supporting Torah is one thing. I support Torah, I get reward, you get reward. My reward won't be as great as your reward. But, you know, there's Hachzakas Torah. But Yisachar Zevulun, he says, is a shutvus gomor, is a business partnership, and you apply all the rules of partnership. That's
what
you
learn all the Torah, like he sat there and he learned for years and years.
It's a good
Torah, but the Orach Chaim also.
Yeah.
He sat there and he learned and he just worked. He never learned any of the
Torah. No, to me, it's theologically, I mean, forget about the mechanics of partnership. To me, it's theologically difficult that a person should be mafsid some of his sechar of learning because somebody else helped him.
But that's not what's happening today, right? Because today, if a person gets, let's say, money from Kolo, that only covers, let's say, a third of the expenses, in that case, and let's say the wife, like if the wife gets the half, and the person who's sponsoring gets the half, what's left for the person who's learning?
Well, yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like...
Well, first of all, remember that Rav Moshe didn't say generally anytime you get financial support. Rav Moshe's talking about a specific partnership where a guy, Rav Moshe says, this is where a guy agrees to take care of all of my needs.
Yeah, he has to give all of the...
That's correct. In other words, if it's general support of Torah, Rav Moshe's maskil that the machzik Torah gets great reward, and the lomek Torah gets all of his reward.
So if a person
Yisachar Zevulun is a special case where, according to Rav Moshe at least, where one person is agreeing to take care of you.
So if a person provides all the financial support, he gets half the learning. If he provides half the financial support, he gets the quarter of the learning.
That's correct. Rav Moshe's maskil. I believe you're right, but I have to check. In other words, what I don't remember now is whether Rav Moshe says the partnership only works if he gives you 100% or not. But even if Rav Moshe would be maskim, I can give you 50%, but it would always be just half of that. 50% will give me a quarter, etc. May 16th.
So
how is this different than a wife's partnership? How's
this
different than a wife partnership where she gets
100%
of the
power
that her husband puts in without money for it?
That's a little different. That's, you know, when we say Ishto Kegufo, your wife is like you, so therefore, Kadosh Baruch Hu says whatever you earn goes into her bank accounts too, because you're the same. You know, that's
would that
different.
Be one bank account, or would it still be two separate bank accounts?
Each would get 100% there. I don't think Ramachi does not treat the husband and wife as he suffers a woman. Treats it as everyone gets a full schar. Maybe the woman gets more schar because of her mesiras nefesh. That's a separate cheshvan. Okay, but this is a very complicated. Going back a little bit, this issue of mazel versus hashkacha, mazel versus Hashem decreeing what's in your life is a very, very difficult sugya. The Derech Hashem talks about it too. If you look at the Derech Hashem, you could see a discussion of the deterministic nature of mazel in the world. We would call it genetics as well. An example might be that, again, let's take an example that may work according to medical science. We don't even have to use the vocabulary of mazel. A person is born, right? A child is born with a defective heart, okay? And therefore there's a very good chance that at some point, God forbid, the person might die of heart condition. Another person is born with a very healthy heart. Now, in both cases, in order to be spared from death, you need certain zechusim.
You need merits. If you have merits, tzedakah, chesed, Torah, you can have arichas yamim. If you don't have merits, then God forbid a person could die. But the merit, the amount of merit that the person with a defective heart needs would be a greater amount of merit than the person with a healthy heart. Because there's kind of a pre-programmed netiya towards death, that in order to overcome that, you need a stronger zechus than you would need for someone who doesn't have that predisposition. So mazel is essentially a predisposition towards certain negative things, or positive things for that matter. May also apply to a Russia. A Russia that has a good mazel, see this works, although the pipeline analogy doesn't explain it that well, but the mazel could actually give him bracha, and only if he's real, real bad will that pipeline get blocked. Right? So it works that way. Mazel can also be a good pipeline. Right? So that's why a middle-of-the-road Russia might do better than a middle-of-the-road tzaddik. Because the middle-of-the-road tzaddik has his brachos from Hashem being blocked, and he doesn't have the extra zechus to break the pipeline. And the middle-of-the-road tzaddik, the middle-of-the-road Russia isn't bad enough that Hashem would block the pipeline that gives him the brachos based on mazel, right? So it's a complicated question.
It takes schus to get the bracha, and it takes even more schus to break the pipeline?
That's correct. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So you need even more schus to break the...
That's correct.
Rabbi, shouldn't tefillah...
Or to clear the pipeline. Yeah.
Shouldn't tefillah break the pipeline?
Tefillah can often be the schus that does. Yeah, that is really maybe the most powerful thing that does. But it still means it has to go beyond the zechus that entitled you to the reward. You can be entitled to something, but you're not able to get it.
So what's the point of asking Hashem for brachas? A person should daven for release of the pipeline.
In the language of the Mekubalim, that's exactly what you're davening for. In other words, they talk about this all the time. The tzinor. Tzinor is the pipeline. Should be unblocked, etc. And that's exactly how Kabbalistic tefillah is phrased. Okay, let me just say one little comment on pasuk Dalet, the next pasuk. That is, Eishes Chayel Ateres Bala. Again, it's a famous phrase. We know, of course, the last parak of Mishlei is devoted to the Eishes Chayel, the woman of valor, but she makes an appearance much earlier as well. Eishes Chayel, a woman of valor, a woman of courage, Ateres Bala, is the crown of her husband, the glory of her husband. But then he gives us the opposite perspective. Ucharekav v'atzmosav mevisha. A shameful woman, or actually mevisha might actually mean, essentially, mevisha might actually mean a woman who humiliates him. Mevisha. It's like rekev, rot, in the middle of the bones. Meaning it just gets into you and you can't get out of it. So here, although the Pshuto Shel Mikra is obviously very, very true, but the Vilna Gaon says, consistent with what he said, I think we actually looked at that Eishes Chayel, that Eishes Chayel is a remez to the Torah itself. We are supposed to be married to the Torah. Again, it's interesting how we have many, many different gender changes in our metaphorical descriptions. In Shir HaShirim, we are the Kala and Hashem is the Chassan. When it comes to Shabbos, we are the Chassan and Shabbos is the Kala. And here too, when it comes to the Torah, we are the Chassan and Shabbos is, and Torah is the Kala. On the other hand, we also have the metaphor that Matan Torah itself was a marriage between Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we go back and forth. But here, at least, the relationship of the Talmid Chacham to the Torah is he takes the Torah as his wife. The Torah is his wife. And the Vilna Gaon says, Chayel, remember he had a beautiful gematria, Chayel is merumas to the Talmid Chacham's connection to the Torah. Because the gematria of Chayel is 48. And Pirkei Avos says there are 48 ways that you acquire the greatness in the Torah. So the Eishes Chayil, the wife, who has these 48 attributes, when you connect to that wife, and you're faithful to her, and you love her, and you honor her, and you cherish her, she will be your crown. And again, this is a remez that in Olam Haba we say, Tzadikim Yoshrim, the Tzadikim sit, V'yatrosehem V'rasheim, the crowns are on their head, that all the Torah they learn is going to be their basis of Olam Haba.
That's why I was saying with the subscribers of Olam, because he never learned, he worked. He learned and he had all the Torah.
I understand.
He doesn't know the Torah. I'm not saying that he doesn't know, but I'm saying...
He can't have that shleimus by definition.
Yeah. That's why I agree with the Archaim.
Now, Mevisha, okay. I'm sure the Archaim is happy to hear that. Anyway, Mevisha is when a person looks for foreign wives. So foreign wives would be all the other things I'm married to, other than my human wife, but the thing I'm married to other than the Torah. I could be married to my career. I could be married to sports. I could be married to politics. But those wives will ultimately be a source of humiliation to you. Maybe shah. They will bring you shame. Because in Olam Haba, they're not going to be so interested about, you know, who won the latest election or the stock market or anything else. So the Asid Lavo, if your wife is the Torah, you will be crowned with glory. But if your wife is something else, there'll be a rat within you that will just cause you humiliation. And pain, right? That's the Eishes Chayil, Ateres Bala, and that's what it means. Rabos Banos Asu Chayil. If you go back to the last verse of the Eishes Chayil, Rabos Banos Asu Chayil, V'yatalis Al Kulana. There may be many, many attractions that have some function in the world. Again, we're not saying other activities don't have value. They're needed as they are needed. And they are useful as they are useful. But the at, you, the Torah, alis al kulana, you are above everything. And therefore one should try to put his efforts in that which is worth more than everything. Right? That's the Eishes Chayil, a teres bala. Okay, maybe we will stop here.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Would a mashkiach tell someone says I could either go into business and fund a whole yeshiva, or I could be a talmid chacham myself and learn a lot? But so would the rebbe tell him go and be a chacham yourself, or go and make 100 chacham?
It's a good question. Now, usually. It's not such a difficult question, because the people who want to go into business, in other words, it's very rare that somebody is a 50-50. I could do either thing. Usually a person who wants to go into business is someone who is not able to sit and learn with so much intensity for so many hours. So the Rosh Yeshiva will direct him to where he'll be able to accomplish more for HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're giving me a rare hypothetical, it's a very rare hypothetical, where a person is capable of learning, you know, all of these hours in Steiging, but he could also go into business and be Machzik Torah and learn much less, I think, by and large, we would say your primary avodah is to do your own Steiging.
Wow.
And that brings all sorts of brachas into the world. It's an interesting question. If somebody, again, it's very hypothetical, so that's not a realistic, you know, you're almost never going to see a realistic question like that. But it is a very intriguing question. I can become, you know, a great, great Talmud Chacham, or I can become a multi-million-dollar supporter of thousands of Talmud Chachamim.
Mm-hmm.
What does Hashem want? And I can do either one.
Mm-hmm.
I can do either one.
Mm-hmm.
What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want me to do? I think the idea would be that we basically say, my goal is to be Mesakin my Neshama to the greatest degree possible. And that would be my avodah.
Mm-hmm.
How that impacts on the world, again, it impacts on the world in different ways.
How does this work with, maybe not money, but with teaching? Would teaching be the same as, well, I have that hour that I could be in, working back to my Neshama versus giving it to others that really am helping them with it?
It's It's an interesting question. According to what I just said, the idea would be do your own learning. On the other hand, I know the Chassam Sofer says that Avram was called the one who loves Hashem because he gave up some of his own ruchnius to learn and teach and be makarev people who were Rishon. So the question would be, would we differentiate between teaching and makarev versus financial support? In other words, that's the question. In other words, let's assume I say it is kedai to teach Torah, to be makarev people, even if it means you're going to learn a little less, because you're bringing people to Hashem. So what about the guy who financially supports 1,000 Talmidim? Is he not also bringing people to Hashem? Would there be a difference between someone who's doing direct spiritual work and someone who is enabling other people to do spiritual work? And would I say, well, if you're just enabling other people, better to focus on yourself? I don't know. The truth of the matter is, now that we're talking about it, although I think Lamaisa we would make such a chiluk, but I'm not sure I understand the basis for such a chiluk. If the issue is focus on me, then I have to focus on me. If the issue is look at your impact on others, then teaching and supporting the chayre should be the same thing. I'm going to think about it. It's a very good question. But as I say, in the real world, we tend to advise people based on where their neshama is pulling them, meaning a person's neshama is pulling. You know, there are people, maybe most people, I mean, who cannot sit and learn all day indefinitely, like the Vilna Gaon, and therefore they need to work just to keep themselves busy, and then they use their money for a good purpose. You know, so that they're kind of directed to where they could do the most good. But if Lo Yitzur, you have literally a shava b'shava, that would be a good. And then you have people, Rosh Hashem, you have people that, Zevulun has to learn too. It's a big mistake. It's not Yisachar learns that Zevulun works. Zevulun is mechuyev to learn, just as Yisachar is supposed to get stuck. You may recall, he was actually here, Rav Tzvi Reisman. We have so many Reismans here, but we have the Rosh Kolo, and Rav Reisman from New York, and this is another Reisman from Los Angeles. And he's a very successful businessman. He's pretty rich. He supports all sorts of Torah projects. You open up a lot of svarim and you see that he's the one that publishes them. And he's written maybe 20 svarim. He's a Talmud Chacham, he gives shiurim, he's mamish, he must learn 8 hours a day or something. Yeah. Wow. There's a lot of hours. Now, 8 hours is not 16 hours, right? Okay, so apparently he had to, he wanted to work, but he certainly still continued to become a big Talmud Chacham and a Marbitz Torah at the same time. And then you have someone, there was a great, great man, I mentioned him, Rav Gedalia Nadel in Bnei Brak. He was Rav Chaim Kanevsky's chavrusa, just to give you an idea of how chashuv he was. And he didn't want, he was offered to be Rosh Kolel of Kolel Chazanish, which is like the Harvard of Kolel and whatever it is. It's a very elite Kolel. Mm-hmm. Stanford of Kolel, whatever. Oxford of Kolel, okay. Mm-hmm. But he didn't want, he mamish held Gadol Hananim Yigi Akapov. He said he is going to work. He is not going to take any money for Torah learning. And he had different things. He was a builder. He was a farmer. He was not rich at all. But he didn't want to be rich. But he learned the whole day. But his parnasa came from physical labor.
How did he learn the whole day if he was a builder?
Well, the whole day minus is whatever amount of time. But he felt that he had to put in the similar time for parnasa. That was the Ratzon Hashem. And he was controversial in that way because that wasn't the normal mahalach here. He also wrote the Ashiurim on Maisa Bereishis, which was also very controversial. And this young guy Slifkin can write about age of the earth and he can get pilloried and he can be put in chayrim. But when Rav Nadel writes it, they couldn't say anything about it. So as a result, they just didn't print the sefer. That's all. But it's available on the internet. So when he was nifter like a few years ago, Sir Chaim Kanevsky said, this is kind of a double entendre, Chaim Kanevsky said, Rav Gedalia was a chad b'daira. He's like unique in the generation. meaning on one end unique in the generation because he was able to work and become a gadol b'tayr at the same time. It's almost not shayach. But it's also a bit of a warning. He's the only one. Don't follow. Don't follow his example.
Are there any books in the harem that are Torah, that are emes? But for some reason they wanted to some reason they just didn't want this part of Torah stressed.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, keep in mind that the Mora Nevuchim, the Rambam's book, Mora Nevuchim, was excommunicated. I mean, hundreds of years ago, right? Because again, certain things could be misleading to people. They're not misunderstood. There are a lot of reasons why a book might be put in chayim, not because it's intrinsically bad.
What kind of topics nowadays they sort of, even though it's Torah, even though it's MS, but they would put it in harem if they...
Well, yeah, so I'll give you the two examples. The two examples are Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's son wrote a biography of his father. Big, big biography of his father. It was excommunicated here in Eretz Israel because he talked about how different Gedolim used to like to read secular books sometimes. Like Rav Aaron Cutler liked Dostoevsky, and Rav Yaakov liked some science books, or whatever it was. So it was thought that that's not a good thing to tell people because people might learn less. Nobody said it's not true, but they don't want B'nai Torah necessarily. Maybe I shouldn't tell you. They don't want B'nai Torah to get involved in that, right? It's not false. There's nothing in the Sefer nothing in the book that's false, but whatever. Now,
and who reads these books and decides that they should be put in the... who's like the deciding person that says, okay, because like if a Godel wrote a book, somebody could override a Godel and say, No.
If a Godel wrote a book, it would not be likely. But you know, these books are not written by Gedolim. They're written by, you know, cultural people. But what happens basically is that some people, particularly in Eretz Yisrael, but in America too, they like to be very critical. They read these books, and they went to Rav Yashuv Zatzal. They would go to some, you know, great person who doesn't read the book, and they would say, you know, this is what this book says. Do you think this is a book that is suitable for religious people to read? And the Gadol says, without reading the book, says, if it has what you said it has, such a book should not be read. Now, sometimes the report is not a true report, and the Gadol is not saying it's a true report. If it says what you said, you know. So basically, it's a bunch of people who are not necessarily so great, who are the self-appointed censors, and then they try to get letters from Gedolim that this book is not good, sometimes by exaggerating how bad the book is or whatever. Okay? So what can I tell you? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so you are a good
thank you.
Okay.
In Lech Lecha today, I was just noticing, like, maybe it could be a smacher for the Chavos HaLevelos. I don't know, maybe it's not, but it says, the Makom, what is it? Atalame Mikelasam Shel Roshayim the Bracha Shel Tzadikim from this week, from today's parasha.
Yeah.
So, I think we're at Torah Mimi, of course, Rashi, who says it's like in the same place, but then the Lashon of Atalamed doesn't fit. But he says, Shah, that Hashem takes the Schar Shel Zeh away from the Rashi and gives it to the Tzaddik. So it's kind of similar to the Torah Mimi.
Yeah. There is a Gemara. Now, there is a Gemara. Now, the Gemara doesn't say it by Lashon Hara. The Gemara says it, and you have to know what this means. The Gemara, he talks about this later in the Spirit. He says that a tzaddik is naitel chelkai v'chelek ha-rasha began Eden, and the rasha is naitel chelkai v'chelek ha-tzaddik began. In other words, what does it say? It says a tzaddik gets the portion of the rasha in Olam Haba, and the Rasha gets the portion of the Tzaddik in Gehenna. Now, if you read that literally, that would mean the Tzaddik gets the mitzvos that the Rasha has, and the Rasha gets the Averos that the Tzaddik is. But if that's what it means, that's not fair. what does it mean? And for Kirt, the Rambam says Beferus, and even Rishayim get reward on their mitzvot, and Tzaddikim get punished on their Averos. So the way I think you understand it is very, very different. And that is, it's like this. Every person comes into the world with a predetermined share of Olam Haba and a predetermined share of Gehenna. Now you can make it bigger or smaller, but there's a predetermined share. So here's what happens. When a Rasha dies and hasn't earned his share, so the share goes to the tzaddik. Now, which tzaddik we'll see. In other words, it's not that the tzaddik takes away what the Rasha earned. Right. Rather, Hashem simply adds to the tzaddik's reward that portion of Olam Haba that was given to the Rasha that the Rasha didn't earn. Same thing with Gehenna. Like, it's almost like an average. Hashem determines, like, what's the average Gehenna of everybody? And that's kind of set aside. This room is set aside for Reuben, the Gehenna. So, what happens is, Hashem doesn't like vacancies. If the tzaddik did not earn that room in Gehenna, so it gets redistributed as an extra Gehenna for the Rishon as well. So, the tzaddik will be punished for his averos, and the Rasha will be rewarded for his mitzvahs. We're really dealing with the unearned extra space that hasn't been assigned. Now, which Rasha, which tzaddik get it? You know, what do we mean when we say tzaddik gets? Which tzaddik? So we'll see. The Gemara actually suggests that this is very limited. This is limited to the tzaddik who tried to be mochiach the Rasha and didn't improve them. It's limited to that particular relationship of a tzaddik and a rasha. So the tzaddik will get those mitzvos that he would have encouraged the rasha to do that the rasha didn't do. That's kind of the thing you'll get.
Thank you. Okay.
Well, Chovas also says that nobody in the world could hurt a person.
Yeah, that's the Chovas Lavavis. That's correct. Chovas Lavavis is the big sefer that says every single thing that happens in the world is only because Hashem decreed that it happened. That's right.
So, in a way, nobody could take away a person's panasa, no matter how hard they tried.
That's correct.
And nobody could give a person more, no matter how hard.
That's correct.
So how can these blockages and shamayim?
No, that's what I'm saying. The Chavis HaLevavos that's not accepting this approach. The Chavis HaLevavos would apparently deny Lagamri. Yes. Chavis HaLevavos would deny Lagamri the Kayach of Mazalos. Now, how will he learn different Gemaras is a good question. Chavis HaLevavos says everything comes directly from the Kodesh Baruch Hu. There is no intermediary force that can block it one way or the other. But that's a machlokas. Okay.
Next week, is it early?
Oh, yeah. The question is, should we make it earlier? People were here. We can make it earlier. Shabbos is over so early. Is it better to do it earlier? People want.
Yeah.
8:30?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. 8 o'clock. So next week, I mean, session will be 8 o'clock. 8 a.m.